Good morning. My name is Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Everybody awake? I did put this stuff up here. These are just a few recommendations of feedback that has been very positive. Mark H. and Joe H. Mark Houston and Joe Hawk have done some workshops over the years, and their tapes are incredible. Most of us have heard of Joe and Charlie, and they've done just so many workshops, and you can get any one of their workshops. They're pretty much all the same and very methodical, very simple way of going through the book. I handed Julia a set of tapes that I had done in Jersey, big book. There's 14 CDs there. Gone through the book and kind of gone outside the box with that workshop. Chris, his brother Myers, and myself did something called Primary Purpose in Pennsylvania. And Glenn K. Audio over in Long Island, New York, 1-800-257-TAPE. You go to the website, and there's just many, many tapes you can order from there. And let me tell you that I'm putting this up there to be helpful. I don't make money from this recommendation. Please understand that. If I did, I'd be a very rich man. And I'm not. So that's just some things to look at. On www.aaprimarypurpose.org, you can download talks there, and you can go to a link called XA Speakers, and there's just a whole bunch more tapes, talks you can hear, and you can download those. And on some of the links, they have history. They have photographs of early AA. I mean, just a really neat website, AA Primary Purpose. And they'll even, there's a link there across the states into Europe of some of the conventions and conferences that are taking place. And it's pretty up to date. So something I check in every once in a while and see what's going on in the world of AA. We're going to talk this morning about pretty much steps 10 and 11. And what I'd like to get to is getting into 10 and 11 for the first time and what we do when we're around here a while to grow up spiritually, to grow in understanding and effectiveness, what that looks like for you now and what that looks like for me now. What's our current practice? Do we have a practice? And I will tell you this up front, talking about steps 10 and 11, specifically 11 with meditation and nightly review. If you're not doing prayer meditation, the thinking mind will turn around and judge you for it. You're not praying and meditating. You're doing something wrong. You're a poor AA member. You really should get out of this workshop. This doesn't apply. Things like that. And what I ask you is to just be aware of that if you do experience any of that. Or if you experience some resistance to some of the things I may talk about this morning. Please understand it's ego, it's illness, and it'll show up. The resistance will show up with the squirming in the chair, looking at the watch, I got to get out of here. Oh no, the guy's talking about God, it's going to be one of these deals, right? Need more coffee, just anything to get out. Be aware of that. It's your ego where the illness lives, working. So be aware of it, watch it. Don't get identified with it, don't get attached to it. Because the last thing a thinking mind, last thing the ego wants to hear is something that's going to kill it. And what we are here to do when we go through the work is silence the ego and kill all the manifestations of self. We need to experience the death of self for successful living. And the more God I experience, the less self is involved. The more self is involved, the less God I'm going to experience. And sometimes when we talk about God, it ruffles feathers. Tough. I can't deny a solution. I can't deny truth. Ego screams when we talk about God because it knows there's something more powerful than it. and it doesn't want to hear that. Self-reliance fails miserably when it comes to combating alcoholism and getting recovered. God could and would if he was sought, whatever your conception of God may be currently. Even if you feel it's inadequate, it isn't like that old-timer who's sure about God. It isn't like that guy who's doing a workshop who's sure about God. That's okay. Our own conception of God, no matter how inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. So it may be G.O.D., Group of Drunks, Good Orderly Direction. As I shared yesterday, I usually hook newcomers in who experience a little resistance with this power of God when I present to them, why did you come to AA to stop drinking? So you think AA is more powerful than you, more powerful than your alcoholism? Yes. So that's a power greater than yourself. They got them. And that works. It worked for me at the very beginning. I found power in the numbers in Alcoholics Anonymous, safety in the numbers. And I would go to a lot of meetings at the beginning because I felt safety sitting among you and power. And Group of Drunks, Good Orderly Direction, God was what got me from point A to point B. Then I begin the work, and then there was a conversion, excuse me, where it became a God of my God, a God personal to me. What we want to do in going through this work is not gain knowledge. We'll gain knowledge. We read a book, we study a book, we'll gain some knowledge. What we're really seeking is experience. Because our book uses the words combine knowledge and experience. Just gaining knowledge will not be sufficient enough to get me to a place called recovered and experienced God. It's kind of like reading a novel or studying a history book. It's all up here, and then we put it away and we move on. With this book, we want to experience the information in this book, experience what's in this book, seek experience. Everyone I work with, and every time I do a deal like this, it's my mantra for the weekend, seek experience. That's how this information becomes alive. That's how we experience a shift. And suddenly, it doesn't become a language of knowledge, it becomes a language of experience when we talk, when we work with others. Seek experience. When I get to 10 and 11, I get an opportunity to talk about something that will destroy every one of us if we're not careful. It's called a thinking mind. The main problem of the alcoholic symptoms is in the mind, not the body, right? And the thinking mind, one of the ways it works is like this. It gets immediately attached to the external world. The thinking mind is obsessive and compulsive. It's relentless. It has no mercy. And it usually is attached to before and later on. Before, if they would have only did this, I would be okay. If my boss only did that, if she only did this, if he only did that. And we're constantly replaying the stuff over and over and over again. If they would have only done this, if the weather would have been better, you name it, we'll fill in the blank. And if it would have only been this way. And we're constantly back there. And if we're not there, we immediately shoot to the future. When the future looks like this, I will be okay. When they do this, I will be okay. When I make enough money, I will be okay. When I get the promotion, I will be... It's all relentless. And it has no mercy because somewhere in there, we're to blame. And it goes to before and later on. Before and later on. Never being present. The mind refuses to be here present. Not living in the past and not living in the future. It can't. Ego needs something to attach itself to, needs drama, constantly looking for drama. Give me drama, give me more drama. No drama, I'll create drama. Anything to keep me present. When I'm present and I experience now, all is okay. Many times we'll experience fear, right? And the question to ask ourselves is this: am I in any immediate danger right now? Well, if a gun isn't pointed to my head and the house isn't burning down, the answer is usually no. I'm in no danger. And I wait a couple of minutes, and I ask myself the question again, am I in any immediate danger right now? No. So why am I, where is fear coming from? Why am I experiencing fear? It's coming from a thinking mind, usually attached to something that someone didn't do or did do, and it annoyed me. Fear, evil and corroding threat. It wants me away from presence. It wants me away from now. It wants me away from experiencing God. Simply put, no mind equals total presence equals peace. And I work with this with breath. Going through my day, breath. Pay attention to breath. In prayer, meditation, breath. When I'm speaking with others, breath. Breathe. Pay attention to my breathing. Can I listen to the silence between the words when someone speaks? Or am I ready to get right in there and give them an answer when they didn't even ask for one? When you're talking to me, I'm already preparing my answer and I'm not listening to you. My ego's taken over. Presence. Don't need to speak. Don't need to give an answer. Don't need to give input. Let me absorb what you're saying and pay attention. Let me be present and listen to the silence. It will slow me down, put me into pause, and suddenly I am back. You know how you know when you're driving your car and you're driving down the road and you're all over the place? You're on your way to work. It's like 7 o'clock in the morning, and you just beat up your boss and about 6 coworkers, right? You didn't even get there yet. If they do this, and it goes on and on. If she doesn't do this, if he doesn't do that. And you just got into your car and turned the key over, and you're not even there yet, right? And then as you're driving down the road, you got all these dramas going on. You're all over the place, and suddenly you're back, and you go, what was that about? Right? I'm back. I'm driving again. Okay, we're driving. And then the mind kicks in, let's go. Let's not stay present too long. Let's figure something out, something else to think about. And then we're off and running again. And then we come back and we're off and running again. And so the thinking mind uses the present moment just to take a deep breath to get going again. And it's never good. When a thought life stops, I become awake and present to the moment. I experience no mind. See, if I'm in my mind, chances are I'm not experiencing God. So in order to experience God, you must be out of your mind, right? I experience peace and stillness. What we experience simply is freedom. Freedom. You know how neat it is? Did you ever get this where you're very present and aware? Where you walk into a room and you don't need to interpret. You don't need to figure out. You don't need to judge or critique. You don't need to do anything. But you find yourself very present and aware. Working with others, talking with others, listening to what they're saying. It's easy. It's presence. Doing chores. If any of you guys are maybe gardeners or have some sort of thing you like to take on, hobbies or something, do you ever notice how present you are? You're not thinking about anything else other than what you're doing? I love people who do gardening because it's almost like a walking meditation. They are so present. I've seen this, so present to creating and giving life to these plants and digging. And there's no before and later on. They're absolutely present, and we can experience that as we go through all our affairs, with all the dramas and all the insanity that's out there. How am I walking through that? The tools in our book allow us to do that, because the tools in our book take us to God, and God will give us that in abundance, because at that point, we are of maximum service to God and the people around us. Why I write inventory. One of the reasons why I write nightly review is to get clear so I can hear God, hear you. If I'm still plagued with voices of yesterday, how can I possibly hear the voice today? I can't. The God that speaks to us, that subtle nudging, that quiet voice, gets pushed aside because of the drama going on, and I'm consumed with me. Before we get into 10 and 11, there's one of the topics here is, when is it time to rework the steps and how to do this? Say I've gone through the 12 steps and I've had my experience. I think you had asked that question yesterday, when is it time to rework the steps, which is a great question. And for some of us, we just do the annual going through the steps every year. Some of us do it every 6 months. Some of us do it every couple of years. But when do I know it's time to go through this work? And that varies from person to person, but some of the things to look for is, am I experiencing being restless, irritable, and discontented? Am I starting to experience a little contempt prior to investigation? Am I starting to experience fear a lot more than once in a while? Am I living in some resentments? Am I attached to now resentments? I'm like this Velcro. Give me a resentment, it sticks to me. I'm suddenly sizing up the room and I don't like people in the room again. My perceptions start to change. And from worshiping the power, suddenly I become the power. Don't need to write inventory. I don't need to pray today. Meditation's fine. I have a lot of amends to make, but we'll do it tomorrow. Tell that newcomer I'm sleeping. You know, I don't need to work with this person. I don't need to sponsor more people. These are little things to pay attention to, that what has happened is we're experiencing reemergence of ego. Ego's running the show again, easing God out, E-G-O, ease God out, and I become the power. And I start to look for things to make me feel good. Him, her, money, job, whatever. And I start to worship my emotions. If I'm feeling good, I don't need to go through the work. If I'm feeling bad, oh no, I need to go through the work. And that is not, we're like kind of up and down, riding a wave. So that's one of the things we can pay attention to when it's time to rework the steps. And guys I sponsor, as my sponsor's done with me, the approach to going through the work is a little different the first time compared to maybe the fifth or sixth time. The very first time through the work, we'll start from the cover and go through the first 164 pages very, very, in a very methodical way. I handed some worksheets out to Julia, something called the tornado exercises, and what I do with these guys who've been through the work a few times is to look at current stuff, current inventory, and bring them up to date as to where they are. And the easiest way to do that is we go to page 52 in the big book, and we have the bedevilments there. It says we're having trouble with personal relationships. Take a statement, turn it into a question. Am I having trouble with personal relationships? Yes or no? If I am, let's write about where. Can't control my emotional nature. What's that look like? Well, I am kind of up and down. Okay, where? Where am I experiencing these ups and downs? What am I resentful about? Prey to misery and depression. Am I? Yeah, I am, if I think about it. I have no idea what it's going to be like when I wake up every morning. Yesterday I was joyous, happy, and free. Today I want to kill people. And I don't know what tomorrow is going to bring. That's a prey to misery and depression. You know, driving in the car, everything's good, the sun is out, and I make a corner, turn the corner, and suddenly depression is on me. Anger is on me. Where is this coming from? You with me? Right? Can't be of real help to other people. I don't feel real useful, full of fear. Am I experiencing this? And I write about where. And I get to see where my current unmanageability is, because that's it. That's my current unmanageability right there. Page 52 is a great barometer to see where I am. Current unmanageability. And if I'm experiencing current unmanageability, it's probably because God is not involved in my life anymore, that I've taken over. Anywhere in my life that I'm experiencing fear, I'm not having an experience with God. Experiencing resentment, I'm not having an experience with God. So it's a great page to take a look at to see how I'm doing. And I get guys to look at that. And then we revisit the work and bring it up to date. We'll go through Bill's story. How does that apply to you now? How does doctor's opinion apply to you now? Because eventually what's behind all of this is another drink. And we just have the book meet us where we are. I'll have them rewrite the third step, redo the third step with me. And there's some neat assignments to do with this third step prayer. when we read it out of the book, God, I offer myself to thee, the bill with me, and do with me thou wilt. And I mean, a lot of this language that some of us may not be used to. I didn't walk around saying, thou wilt be done. You know, I mean, I'm from New York. We don't talk like that, right? What my sponsor had me do was write out the third step prayer as it's written in the book, word for word. And I do this with guys, whether they're going through the work the first time or the 20th time. And underneath that, I have them write out, break it down line by line, write out their interpretation of that prayer in their language. What is this third step prayer saying to you in your language? And work with that. It suddenly becomes your third step prayer, my third step prayer. It speaks to me. I start to experience the words in there. They are not words on a page anymore. They're my words. They're broken down. And every time a guy does that, every time one of the prospects does that, it changes for them. It's a new experience with the third step prayer. And we'll get on our knees and do the third step prayer, and they launch onto a course of vigorous action, step four, and the fourth step inventory is the focus is on primary stuff, on current stuff. What's going on now? Current resentments, current fears. Old stuff may show up, so be it. Things I've visited in the past may show up, so be it. Put it on paper. We discuss it. One of the practices I work with is in our big book, it says person or persons. And we take the latter, literally, persons, and do fifth step with more than one person. If you work with one person fifth step, that's fine. I have found the more people who are on this path who know about me, all of me, the freer I am. And so I'll sit with one other person, and I'll pray, show me who to sit with. Person will come to you, I'll make a call, can you hear a fifth step? And then I'll go sit with my sponsor. And that's one of the things I work with. It also is a great way to smash ego some more. It's experience a force feeding of humility, which is spiritual growth. Not humiliation, but humility. Difference. Instructions for 6 and 7, and they're out making current amends if they have any amends need to be made. And one of the things I have them work with, as I do, I may have a list of 10 amends I have to go make. But if that's all that's on the list, and I think that's the beginning and end of it all, I'm suddenly playing God. Because there may be more, and more will be revealed. And the prayer we work with is, God, if there's any amends out there that I'm not consciously aware of, make me aware of them. I stand ready to go make more amends if there's any there that I'm not aware of. And you start going through your amends, and suddenly new ones show up. Or talking to others about amends. It's a great practice. How are you doing with amends? Where are you with your ninth step? How many more you have to make before you're clear? And we talk about that, our experiences with the ninth step approaches. And it happens every time. I just thought of something. I need to make amends to... I need to go make financial restitution, and it starts to surface. And it's God delivering us this information to us so we can get freer. I mean, that's what we're looking to do, get free. And God saying, okay, here's what you've accumulated. Go to it. I'm going to give you the power to go get free. This is what's in your way. When we're writing a fourth step, and I don't want to get too far away from 10 and 11 here, but when we're writing a fourth step, we're going down dark alleys. We're going to visit sordid spots in our lives. Some of those places we'd rather not even look at or remember. But we need to. We need to go back in order to be present. We need to go back in order to move forward. And it isn't about these horrible things I did and what a terrible person I was, but it's very simply God delivering us this information. When we follow directions and pray before we write our fourth step, where do we think the information's coming from? Us? No. From God? Yes. Therefore, it's good. So when I'm writing inventory and I'm coming up with some things that were pretty uncomfortable to remember and to go through, and those resentments that I can still pretty much taste because they're so real, God is delivering this information to me, and it's good. And therefore, it's perfect. The fourth step then becomes perfect in spirit. No right and wrong. I ask God to allow me to be searching, fearless, and moral, get quiet, and start writing, following directions in a big book. My fourth step in spirit is then perfect. And George and I were talking about this earlier. I can always go, I need power. I get through the work and I can always go back and revisit the work again to go back through it again. More stuff needs to be done. Revisit. And the times it takes to go through the work over and over again is the more we go through it, the quicker we move through the work. It isn't this arduous task where we're going to be in there for like, 2 months of labor. It goes quick. Let's go over to page 84 if you have a big book. I'm working out of a third edition with step 10. And right before it goes into step 10, it says, it's referring to the nine-step promises. It says, are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Sometimes newcomers will come here and say, when is it going to change? When is it going to get better? What's it going to look like? And we can very simply show them page 25, where it talks about the great fact, and back that up with pages 83 into 84 with the nine-step promises. Because both of those pieces of work in our book are talking about the spiritual experience, the change, the shift in perceptions. So I tell a newcomer, this is what you will experience. This is what will happen to you. And here's the hook. They will always materialize if we work for them. It's not going to happen by walking into the meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. The next paragraph says, this thought, which thought are they talking about? That they will always materialize if we work for them, right? Brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. Step 10 has about a page and a half of incredible spiritual information and instructions. A page and a half of life-changing stuff and promises. There are words in our book that tells us to keep moving. The only time in my book it tells me to stop is after the fifth step, we're quiet for an hour. My book uses words like continue, vigorous, commenced, grow, turn, next, must go further, watch, at once, way of living. These words are telling me to go, not to hang out. Well, you had your spiritual awakening, Pete, so lounge for a little while. It says we've entered the world of the spirit. It doesn't mean now I have free. As I clean up the past, I enter the world of the spirit. As I clean up the amends, if I have 10 amends on that list and I'm cleaning up number 7 and number 8, I've entered the world of the spirit. What I've had very simply is the spiritual experience. Because by the time we get to step 12 in this book, it doesn't talk about having had a spiritual experience, it talks about working with others. You've had your experience, now here's what to go do with it. Go work with others. So somewhere between 9 and 10, we've been enlightened. We've been made awake. We've had a spiritual experience. It says, we vigorously commence this way of living as we clean up the past. We have entered the world of the spirit. Can I talk about that at a meeting? From a place of experience, what it's like living in the world of the Spirit. Do you want to hear silence at most AA meetings? Say the topic tonight is to talk experientially about what it's like living in the world of the Spirit. That's what you'll hear. And they'll tell you not to come back anymore. Right. Can we talk about what that's like? Very few meetings, and sadly, a small portion of Alcoholics Anonymous members can talk about that. The majority who are just doing fellowship and were top-heavy in fellowship are relapsing or experiencing current unmanageability. The minority in AA are doing this deal and their experience being joyous, happy, and free. And yet the minority who are doing this book, experiencing being joyous, happy, and free, and having an experience with God, they're understanding and look like they're the controversial ones in Alcoholics Anonymous. And yet when this thing started, it was the majority doing this, and very few walked away from it because it was spiritual life or spiritual death. It says, this is not an overnight matter. It should continue for a lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. As I go through my day, if I have an opportunity to write inventory during the day, I will. As I go through my day, I watch for these things. Here's a few words to work with. Watch, aware, observe, and turn. Turn in order to go out. Turn into the power in order to go out. If I don't turn in, I will go without. But if I turn in too long, I better look out. What do I mean by that? We turn into this power in order to go out with this power into our affairs. But if I turn in too long, what I've done is start to worship me again. Because my job, God wants me out there working with others. And I have started to worship methodology rather than the power. Watch, aware, observe. As I'm going through my day, watch. Be a witness to my thinking mind. Be a witness to what's going on. Instead of getting wrapped up in everyone's tornado. Getting wrapped up in everyone's drama. You with me? Why do I take things so personally when someone says something to me that may be unkind, and I wear that? I wear that for the rest of the day. Not realizing that they may be untreated. They may be sound asleep. Why would I wear that and take it so personally? When I do, I have to write inventory. But if we walk into a room and a newcomer says something that's unkind, I say, well, he's a newcomer, she's a newcomer. I know where they are. Would I wear that? You know, if they tell me, take your big book and stick it somewhere. If I'm walking in Manhattan, in New York, and there's one of the beggars on the streets there, and he says something unkind to me, would I get really take that personally and get so upset by it? But we do things like that. And we fail to see that someone may be in a place of fear. Someone may be completely untreated. Someone may be in their own drama. And yet I'm going to step right into that tornado and ride it with you. It's total insanity, isn't it? But if I learn to watch, be aware, observe, I'm suddenly getting silent and being still and present with no interpretation, no judgments, present. Watch, aware, observe. Turn in order to go out. Those are four words I've been working with for a very long time now. With step 10, it says, we continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. There's two parts to step 10. There's continuing to take personal inventory, an extension of step 4, and when I'm wrong, admit it promptly. That's my amend step. Keep current, right? So when I have an opportunity to write, I will during the day if something's troubling me. And then I turn in, and I'll seek counsel if I need to. Call up a sponsor. I work with a word in this 10-step called immediately. I have a few people I work with immediately. I have a resentment that's burning. I took something personally and it's burning me. I need to discuss this with you. I've made prayer. I wrote out inventory. Hear it and guide me. And little by slowly we get past that. We get free of that. Where we run into trouble sometimes is with writing inventory, whether it's during a day or a nightly review, is thinking that I have to experience a resentment first, get really angry, hurt a few people along the way because I'm angry, and then go home and write inventory. What about we have that wedding to go to next week, and Uncle Joe is going to be drunk and make his ethnic slurs and criticize me because I'm in AA. You have an Uncle Joe too? Is that it? Yeah. My ex-wife had a relative who was in and out of AA and thought we were weak and cowardly. And I went to an affair once, and he had a drink in one hand and a beer in the other. He was fired up, and he was already slurring. The cocktail hour was about 2 minutes old, but he was already, you know. And he comes down out of the cocktail hour off this platform, and he slurs to me, "I want you to talk to my nephew. He's got a drinking problem." I had a laugh. But this particular guy, we'll call him Uncle Bill, every time he would get drunk, he would do a lot of, say a lot of ugly things about Italian people, and I'm Italian American. And you're all gangsters, you're all corrupt, you all should be locked up. And he was a cop, he was a policeman back in the States. And he would go on and on when he was drunk. When he was sober, he was pleasant. Occasionally grumpy, but pretty pleasant guy. I mean, you could sit down and break bread with him when he was sober. When he was drunk, I figured out ways to beat him up, you know. And I had this wedding to go to when he came down and said, "Speak to my nephew, he has a drinking problem." And I had this going on. I got this wedding to go to. I know he's going to be there. And I had the churning going on. And I had the mind projection of what he was going to say, what it was going to look like, what I was going to say back to him. You know, in our mind, we're great. We have the right answers at the right time. We put people right in their place. But when it happens, we don't do anything. And I had this thing going on, and I'm just seething, waiting for next week. Okay, I'm going to go have a good time, damn it. And my sponsor said, and I'll clean up the language, he says, "Why don't you write the inventory now on your resentment? It didn't happen yet, but you already got it going. And how much fear is involved in this? Like, you're going to look bad around this person. He's going to talk down to you." It made perfect sense. I got a pen, a paper, made prayer, and I wrote down in resentment, "Uncle Bill." It had to do with something in the future, but it was bothering me nonetheless. And I wrote out a little fear inventory, and I work with this. And when he came down off that platform and said that, I had to laugh. But for the grace of God, didn't take anything personally, and I moved on. If I have the job interview, got a job interview tomorrow morning, Monday morning, new job, they're not going to like me. They're not going to hire me. What if they do like me and do hire me? You know, kind of goes like, I need a job. I need a job. Then I get an interview. Oh, no, I got a job interview for a job. What do I do now? You know, got all this fear going on. Why wait till I sit in front of the human resources person or whoever's interviewing me in fear and sweating and wondering what's going to happen? Where on Sunday morning, I have a fear about Monday morning about the interview, and I can write out fear inventory now and see what's going on with me. It's all coming from the mind, and get a little bit clearer and see how delusional all of it is and how much self-reliance is really going on and how little God-reliance is going on. And I'll call up someone and say, "Here's what's going on. I have a job interview tomorrow, and I'm scared to death Sunday morning. Here's my fear inventory." And I get past that. And I walk in Monday, maybe with some butterflies, but not gripped in fear. Because I've gotten free. And I share this with you because it's worked for me. There's been times where I do deals like this. And I usually have fun with this stuff. And I sometimes get excited about doing them. Sometimes I even become animated about, you know, doing these things. It's a really neat deal. And sometimes I get incredibly silent, which is usually the way it is for me. I get very quiet. But there's been times when I've been asked to go do something and I have been fearful. How am I going to pull this off? Suddenly my thinking mind says, "You never read the big book. You have no experience. You have no right being in front of these people talking about your experience. You're Pete Marinelli from Brooklyn, New York. You do not belong talking about God. How dare you? Get someone else." And my mind says, "Let's figure out a way to get out of this commitment to wherever." If my mind ran the show, I'd be drunk. What do I do? Prayer. Fear inventory. Call up my sponsor. "Hey, Mark, what is it now?" "I got fear going on. Here's what's cooking." And then I suit up and show up and always have fun with this. So I don't need to be in the drama to write inventory. It says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, and that's that word I've been working with, discuss immediately. Rather than hanging around with a resentment and figuring out the solution on my own, discuss it with someone immediately. And there's four of us who work with this word, immediately. And make amends quickly if I palmed anyone. Then I resolutely turn my thoughts to someone I can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. I was a longshoreman for 23 years. Tough blue-collar industry. And they did just, our union got really weak and they were allowed to do downsizing and a lot of us got cut loose and I was one of them. And I figured with 23 years in the industry, I was safe and protected and got cut loose. There was a whole bunch of us that they let go. And I'm back looking for work, and a friend of mine said, would you want to come work for me? And he says, how would you like to do something called day trading? And I don't even know how to balance a checkbook, by the way. And I studied for something back in home called a Series 7 test to trade stocks. And terrible math student. I wasn't a great student. And I studied like 8 hours, 10 hours a day. I went to school. And I almost passed this test after a few attempts, which was a moral victory for me. When that didn't work out, he said, I'd like you to come work for my human resources department. We're opening up a new office. You'd be ideal for that. You work well with people. I've seen you in AA. He was one of us. Come work for me. And I was honored by that and went to work for him. The problem was I was a blue-collar longshoreman guy walking into a corporate world. It took me 6 months to figure out what as per means. You know, I thought they didn't know how to spell. I remember calling up a friend of mine and says, what is this as per stuff? I mean, what do I do with this? And he explained to me what that meant. I thought it was a grammatical error. Somebody, the boss is writing as per. What a schmuck. You don't know how to write, you know. And And I had to learn that there's a language. Anyone's in that corporate world knows they talk funny. There's this corporate way of speaking. And I'm used to this blue collar like, hey, Joe, move that blanking chair that's in the way. And in the corporate world, it's like, would you kindly place this here? And it was just very strange. Words like, will you absorb the cost of these expenses? What? Are you going to pick up the tab? That's how I learned how to talk, right? You know. So it was a learning experience for me, nonetheless. Right? But there was a gentleman who was going to kind of train me. I never went to university, and he did. And he reminded me every day that he went to university and I didn't. Right? And he was this guy from Vermont or Connecticut, you know. University wore penny loafers, and I didn't. And every day he would show up and remind me about this stuff and how little I knew and how much he knew. And I suddenly started to become gun-shy around the guy. What do I mean? I was intimidated by him. And a little, I was fearful. And I started to question everything about me. And with the thinking mind, that's all it needed was a little bit of energy to start to roll. And I was getting just a short time into this job, not even wanting to go to work. I have to deal with this guy, and what am I doing here? And I don't belong here. I don't know how to talk like these people. I didn't even know how to send out emails properly, and this guy had me in his grip, right? And I got angry enough to get to a point where I called up my sponsor one day, and I was just going. I was just really angry. And I'll clean up the language a little bit, but he reminded me about inventory. And I wrote inventory, a lot of inventory on this guy, and fear inventory, and shared it with my sponsor, and made some prayer, and I prayed for him, for this person. And I also prayed for me to get past this. And I worked with this. And here's what happened. I walked into work one day, and I'm looking to get angry. I'm looking to get fearful, and it was removed. It was taken right out of the equation. And what happened, I was able to walk shoulder to shoulder with this guy, whether he liked it or not. And we were recruiting. We used to go out to the Ivy League schools and recruit the future graduates to come work for us. And we were figuring out what schools we're going to go to and planning out the trips. Plan accordingly. That's a nice word I learned, accordingly. And the expenses and all the things we had to do to go to, say, Princeton or Yale or Penn and all these nice schools. And I was able to work on this, I'll never forget this, work on the project with this guy, give my input shoulder to shoulder with him, and even be helpful to him without any of that stuff in the way, because of writing it out on paper, getting to see, I get to watch me on paper, I get to observe me on paper, I become aware of me on paper. Resentment caused, what it affects, my fourth column, me involved in this again. And I get to see how futile this is, how I'm taking everything personally, how I'm using me instead of God, and it goes on and on and on, and I saw how futile and silly and delusional all of it was, and with prayer, I got past it. I was excited about going to work again, because I was a really good recruiter. I worked well with these young people. It's one of the gifts God's given me to get in there and work with other people. And I got to recruit a lot of really good students to work for us. What came out of that was we opened up an office in Staten Island that I was given the ball and go run with it. It was mine. And it became our how would I say this, biggest money-making office of all five offices that we had around the country. I was very proud of that. And I recruited every one of those kids. So I had a gift for doing that, but I would never have shown up if I would have still been, there he is again, oh my God, better keep my mouth shut, don't contribute, you talk funny, you know. Free. Very simple example in the scheme of things, right? But powerful enough to make my point. It says we have ceased fighting anything or anyone. Let's bring that up to date. Am I fighting with others? If not directly, what's my mind doing? Am I having the fights all the time with others? Here come those big book people again. Here come those middle of the road people again. How am I doing with that? It says we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And this will ruffle a lot of contemporary AA meetings' feathers. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We were asking for sanity in step two, right? It's delivered. The contract's delivered here in step 10 that sanity will have been returned. I have wholeness of mind. And if I have wholeness of mind, I'm not delusional. My mind is not giving me lies anymore to convince me that we can pick up a drink and it'll be okay. I've been set free of that. The contract's been delivered. I'm asking for sanity, wholeness of mind. And in step 10, he says, well, here it is. Watch what our book says. I will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally. And we find that this has happened automatically. I don't have to will myself into doing this. So much for think the drink through, right? Play the tape to the end. Remember where you come from. I don't have to do any of that because it comes to me automatically. By who? God. It says we will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. So why do we tell newcomers to think the drink through when they're using a sick mind to overcome a sick mind? If they do the work in step 10, it says it's going to be done for you. You don't have to do anything other than this work. And we're given a new set of perceptions. We're given new eyes to see and new ears to hear with, because we're given an awakened spirit. It's finally woke up. It says, we will see that a new attitude towards liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. I am recovered. 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 We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. So they're not just giving this out of a book. This is their experience they're coming at us with. This is how we react so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. And that's a warning. Our book is full of promises and warnings. When I do and when I don't. What happens to me when I do and what happens to me when I don't. And here's another warning. It's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels, my accomplishments, the things I've done well. Well, I went through the work, I sponsor a few people, now I can kick back because I'm a guru now and I don't have to do anything else. And my book says I'm headed for trouble if I do. Clear-cut warning, right? It says we're headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. Now, I didn't go to college, so I had to look up what subtle what meant, because I didn't know. And foe, I had a general idea. And it came out to be a great description of what alcoholism's about. Subtle, sly, clever, devious, and difficult to detect. And foe is my personal enemy. Bingo. Alcoholism. Cunning, baffling, and powerful, and very, very patient. My illness don't care that I do this. It don't care I'm sober 18 years. It don't care I have a sponsor. It don't care about anything other than getting me drunk or wanting me dead. And it'll look for a crack in the armor. Let's try this way. Let's try that way. Let's try him this way. Let's get him that way. When I'm in an experience with God, it has no shot. I have like General Schwarzkopf leading the show here. Right? There's no shot. The illness will try, but I have tools to keep it away. Problem's been removed. When I'm not in the sunlight of the Spirit, it starts to chirp. And you know when you're starting to fall asleep by the internal dialogue we're experiencing. I forget his name. He was doing a workshop. And the question was asked to him, how do you know when you're falling asleep? This guy was a monk. Spoke great words. And he says, I know when I'm falling asleep when the internal dialogue starts up. And I got the voices going on. Voices in the head, the internal dialogue, always in drama. Talking to you about I got something going on. When I'm writing, I got something. When I'm driving the car, it's going on. The internal dialogue. The voices in the head. That's when I know I'm starting to sleepwalk again. When there's none of that going on, I know I'm wide awake. When I talk about the thinking mind, there's a difference between the thinking mind using us and us using it. To come here for this trip, I had to plan out some things. Plane, when to leave for the airport, what to bring, right? Things like that. Plan. Use my mind. I get to use my mind. When it's cleared of wrong motives, my thought life is placed on a much higher plane. We'll learn about that in step 11. So I plan. I figure things out. Do I have enough money to get there and things, right? All rational, sane thinking. When the thinking mind is using me, I experience what I talked about before. Better not go there. You have no right to be there. What are you going to talk about? They're not going to ask questions after you speak. They're going to ask questions when you speak. I mean, it goes on and on and on. So crawl underneath the rock and lay there. It's a difference. So we get to use our mind rather than it using us. It says we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day, not occasionally, not when it's inconvenient for me, every day is a day when I must carry the vision of God's will into all my activities. Here's a prayer. Father, show me how to carry the vision of your will into all my activities. And how's that looking? Great topic to talk about in an AA meeting. What's it like carrying a vision of God's will into our activities? What kind of experience do we have with that? How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with me constantly. I can exercise willpower along this line. All I wish is the proper use of the will. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him, God, who has all knowledge and power. Some questions. Statements turn them into questions. If we have carefully followed directions, have I carefully followed directions up until this point? And have begun to sense the flow of God's Spirit into me? Have I begun to sense that into me and out to you? To some extent, I've become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, something beyond the five I was given. A sixth sense. I must go further, and that means more action, and we're at step 11. What inventory has revealed to me is a couple of things, and we'll go to questions. Perceptions of situations will cause me pain and suffering, not the reality of it. My perceptions of a situation cause me pain and suffering, not the reality. We will feel bad about certain things, loss of a loved one. We'll feel bad about that. Loss of a job, we'll feel bad about that. But the more I resist what is, the more I get into a thinking mind and perceptions take over and it becomes bad. It becomes worse. It becomes projection. I'm caught up in more drama. Rather than being accepting of the moment as what someone refers to it as the isness of this moment, regardless of what's going on, and being present. What inventory has revealed to me is I found out, want to know how depressed or sad I was, I experience joy. How angry I was, I experience love. How full of greed I was, I experience giving away what I have and okayness with what I have. How much noise I was attached to, I experienced silence. And not only noise out there, but the noise in the head, I get to experience silence. I see that when I write inventory. My attachments to the external world. The remedy for alcoholism is not getting my external world in order, but it's getting the internal condition well and experiencing God. If I thought page 52 was in order, would that be just having page 52 in order enough for the long run to keep me recovered? If suddenly I woke up and I wasn't a prey of misery and depression, I wasn't full of fear this day, and I felt like I was useful, is that enough? Or do I need to continue to experience God? And on that, with step 10, we'll do step 11 at the next session, and maybe Julia suggested a guided meditation. We can have some fun with that. Any questions? George?
I was very interested in one sentence, one word you pronounced, which was recovered. If you recall yesterday, Chris made a very interesting point. He said, we spend our time saying, we are in recovery one day at a time. And you guys took a very different stand by saying, folks, I'm recovered. Since I had my spiritual awakening, there's no question of me returning to drinking or something like that. And you have read a sentence right now, which I believe is in step 10, and you have said, recovered. Is it written in the book? Is it written in the book? Which page?